Welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat, episode 7 of the 2025 season. Lots to go through in this episode. We'll reflect on the Challenge Cup game against Warrington. We'll hear from Alan Coleman, his post-match press conference from the game against Warrington. We'll talk about some of the talking points in the news this week, notably Nick Gregson's ban and also the signing of Kai Taylor-Ray. We'll also touch upon the Q&A session that Widnes Chairman Stuart Murphy held as part of the Widnes VIPs initiative earlier this week. I'm joined, as ever, by Mike Parsons. And Mike, we'll start with the Warrington game then. And I suppose before I let you get into it, I have to say that I was very... Not very surprised, that's slightly unfair, but certainly didn't think Widnes would be able to... I knew Widnes would be able to compete, but certainly didn't expect Widnes to be able to be in the game for the full 80 minutes. I think I said prior to the starting the commentary, actually, that Widnes have had a knack under Alan Coleman of basically staying in games, no matter who they've been playing in the Championship. Obviously, playing a Super League team is a different kettle of fish, but they proved that they can do that against the best team. Oh, it wasn't Warrington's best performance by a long stretch, but a terrific occasion in front of 7,000 fans. And if anything, Widnes were probably a bit unfortunate to end up on the wrong side of the scoreline.
Oh, 100%. I think it was a great night for the club. I think it was success for Widnes Rugby League. I think everything that you've just said there is absolutely bang on. I think before the game itself, the one thing we was kind of worried about was we knew we was going to get the crowd, we knew we was going to get effort, but the challenge was, how do you get them fans to return? Was it going to be a difficult sell in terms of being able to compete for long periods, or was the game going to get away from us? And by God, you know, I think it's fair to say, you know, if we'd have won that game, there wouldn't have been many complaints, because that's how close we was. It was a hell of an effort. And, you know, some of the quality on show as well, like, let's have it right, James. I think for me, my mind, you've got Matty Fozzard outplaying an England international, an England Knights hooker, where they could rotate. He had to basically go full throttle for what, give or take 70 minutes. I think with Foz, you know, we give him a lot of credit going forward, and I think sometimes his defensive efforts get overlooked. Now, that tackle on Danny Walker, by God, he's not a soft lad, is he? And he felt that one. And it was like that across the park. I thought, you know, we were talking a couple of weeks ago with, you know, potentially getting Roderick Ty on low. I thought both of our centres outplayed him. In fairness, I think Ben Curry was outstanding. I think he was the one for Warrington who really stood up. I think, you know, if you took him off the field, the game may have gone the other way. You know, you've got middles there playing longer minutes, part-time middles playing longer minutes than, you know, some ex-NRL players. Unbelievable effort. But also, we play good rugby. We've spoke on this podcast about, and we'll go into, you know, Kai Taylor-Ray coming into the squad, you know, a bit later in the podcast. But the one thing we've kind of not been critical of, but, you know, we've arguably lacked, was scoring tries from long range. But the brand of rugby we was playing, it had everybody on the edge of the seats. And that try we scored at the start of the second half, you know, Gilmore and Patton linking up, freeing Fleming, who releases Butt, and they combine and score. You know, that's as good a try you could see, you know, in the Super League. It really was. I think it was an outstanding effort. Like you said, Warrington, not their best performance, but I think we made them feel uncomfortable, and they certainly was, and we had them rattled. And the players in the bridge suite, they were gutted. They didn't get the win. And to say that you're gutted, you didn't win, and you had that much of a chance, it says it all. I think it was a huge success for Widnes Rugby League. And I think, you know, the players and the coaching staff now, you know, that it was great to see the North Stand full, but they deserve a lot of that North Stand to turn back up against Barrow when we're next at home for that effort. They really do.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's one of the downsides, is this another month to wait until the next home game. If Widnes had been at home this week or next weekend, they might well have been able to pull some more numbers in straight away. And that's well, I mean, I presume it's out of the club's hands the way the fixtures roll, or whether, you know, I don't know. I know that the RFL send out drafts and stuff. I don't know how much clubs lean back on what the original fixture list plan is. But yeah, it is a shame that there's a month to wait. I thought, like you said, Widnes were excellent. I thought they made Warrington uncomfortable, like you said. And the try at the start of the second half, I think the try right at half time was so unlucky to concede. Widnes should have gone in 6 all at half time. To concede that try right at the end of the first half was a bit gutting. And you sort of felt that when that went over, I'm not saying that you thought it was game over, but you thought, oh, it's going to be a different sort of game in the second half now. But the fact Widnes were able to turn it around and lead against a Super League team, they led for a good 10 minutes at 16-10, and then it was 16 all for a bit of time as well. Was massive credit to them, and especially after the way it had gone against Batley, and the way that Widnes tired against Batley, I was fearful that Widnes were going to drop off in the last 15-20 minutes, and I don't think you could maybe attribute that to the defeat either this time. I think, again, Warrington got a lucky bounce off a kick. I think if that kick bounces the other way or whatever, and Curry doesn't score when he did, there was only 7 minutes to go. It was still in the balance at 16 all. It wasn't inevitable that Warrington were going to win the match at 16 all by a long stretch. So you'll hear from Alan Coleman shortly, but he pointed at a few of the talking points, or a few of them key moments that maybe didn't go Widnes's way. The Rodri Lloyd one in the first half, where he scooped the loose ball up on halfway. If he keeps going, he scores. I think there, you know, for some reason decides to put the brakes on and come back inside. But I still think if he just goes straight, I think even if he gets tackled, there's probably enough strength in him and momentum in him to have got over the line. I think Alan, you'll hear in a minute, but I think Alan Coleman was a bit harsh on Ryan Ince, because he sort of said, oh, if Ryan Ince just drops on it, I obviously had a good view of that from the press box. It just sat up short of the try line for him. So it was one of them where he couldn't just put it down. He had to try and pick it up and put it over the line. Probably the sort of try that if it was a grass pitch, you might have slid over, maybe, but there's no way you could have done that on Widnes's pitch. And then, and Jack Owens is a bit guilty of this sometimes in the second half when Jack Owens kicks on the fourth tackle when it was 16 all. I think Widnes has got to be, they'd not really been in Warrington's end a great deal. And I think that was they should have been lining up for a drop goal there. I think, even though there was what, 12 or 13 minutes left, I still think that, I think that was the only real time Widnes got into Warrington's 20, and I think they should have been trying to line up a drop goal. And you know, and then you don't know how Warrington react to that. You don't know whether, you know, they might go short from the kickoff. It might not make 10. Widnes might get a penalty and then get back up and score, and it's different. So just them three things were the main talking points after the game. But I think it was a great night. It was great to feel part of an important occasion. And as you say, you just hope that there's more of them. There's more. You hope that it's not 7 years until the next moment like that at the stadium, because, and you said it about being a good night for Widnes Rugby League, I think the council have got to take some, the council have got to take some perspective on it. That stadium and Widnes is on the map because of rugby.
Yeah.
With all due respect to everything else that goes on, rugby puts Widnes on the map. That stadium is a, you know, it's a, you know, let's, it is a first-class stadium. Yeah, there are parts of it that maybe do a bit of work, but that stadium is almost the jewel in Widnes's crown in some ways. And I think the council have got to look more at how they can support getting that stadium in use as it was on Saturday. And ultimately that means the council supporting the club more. And hopefully they, if Widnes Rugby is successful, it's surely good for, it's good for everyone in the town. It's good for the council. It's good for making money for everyone rather than sitting on a white elephant almost, which is probably what happens 90% of the time.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, you know, from the council perspective, you know, as it is for everybody in the world, you know, it's about making money. And, you know, surely when you see a North Stand pack like that, and then obviously, you know, if you're going further ahead, if there is a Super League, you know, on the horizon in the distant, you know, in the distance in future, you know, seeing away followings like that, it's all a money thing for the council, and it's an easy way of making money. And let's have it right, you know, without Widnes Rugby League, you're not going to be taking that type of money out of the stadium, are you? It's as simple as that. But just briefly going back to the game, there was one moment that I think we missed speaking about, and we can't not speak about it because it was that good. That cover tackle on George Williams from Jack Owens. I mean, that's textbook, isn't it? That is as good as any cover tackle you'll ever see.
Yeah, it was a good, it was, you know, yeah, it definitely was. I think you've got to give Ryan, I think it was Ryan, give Ryan a bit of credit as well for the ankle tap, which sort of slowed him down. It was that, you know, ultimately Jack Owens needed to be there to make the tackle in the corner, but I think there was just a little ankle tap that just did enough to hold him up, and Jack Owens might still have got there anyway. But yeah, that was a good, and especially in front of the North Stand as well, it really got the crowd up. I had quite a few comments, I had a few messages actually from various people in the game saying how good the atmosphere sounded through the radio. Sometimes it's difficult for me because, you know, obviously I've got headphones on, and as much as I get crowd noise, but it's through someone else's mic, so I don't get the true sort of what it was like. I did try and take my earphones off at times to hear what was going on. But that was that was almost like a great moment in the game that got the fans on their feet. And
an example as well to people who may not have been in a while as well. Let's have it right, mate. We was on the ropes at that point. You know, they broke our line a couple of times, and, you know, you may be, you know, you're running on adrenaline, you know, rather than fitness and energy, sheer desire, and you're coming up with plays like that. You know, that's what this team's about now. And, you know, this soft underbelly that a lot of people who haven't been for a while will have seen, you know, that just does not exist anymore.
The whole performance was the sort of a performance from a team that you want to support. Like,
totally agree.
That is a team that team played that game in a way that you want to support it. And like I said, even though they came up on the wrong side of the result, the context of that is of course massive. And I suppose now it's a case of you're just hoping that, as I just said, really, you're hoping that it's not 7 years until the next big occasion like that at the ground. Because, like, you know, if anything, it's probably been more than 7 years since the last, because that last year of Super League was a joke, really. I mean, it was teetering on the brink before Dennis Betts was sacked, but after Dennis Betts, it was pretty much a non-event. You know, I can't really remember from that season, I can't really remember any games of significance. So, you know, you're almost looking at 8 years since the last proper occasion. I mean, maybe you could say the game after Admin was an occasion, but you're just hoping that something happens somewhere that Widnes can find a bit of momentum. It was good to see other, you know, fans of other clubs saying how good it was and that, you know, Widnes should be in Super League, etc. I don't necessarily buy into the theory that teams should be in Super League because, you know, everyone could make an argument. But I think you could say that there's probably only really maybe 17 or 18 teams who would realistically go into Super League. And Widnes are, of course, one of them. It's just unfortunately for Widnes, they're part of this five or six that aren't in it.
Yes.
And it's just... But Widnes are completely powerless to change. Widnes are almost completely powerless to change it, and that's the frustrating part, especially from a fan point of view, is that there's nothing really that you. It feels like there's nothing you can do to actually make it happen.
No, but I suppose looking at it from a different angle, you know, if you're attracting more crowds like that, and I'm not saying you're going to get that crowd again in the Championship, you're not, but by moving, you know, your attendances up to being, you know, home attendances, one of the best, if not the best in the Championship, if you can do that on a regular basis, you know, above other tides, and you're putting performances in like that, and it's getting round the world of rugby league, that's the way you're going to attract investment, isn't it? And ultimately, the more investment a club can get, the more chance you've got of having a crack and, you know, putting a bit more quality into your team, improving in other areas and then having a real crack. I think when other fans comment of, or, you know, having Widnes back in Super League, I think it comes from a place of course, every team's got to earn it, but it comes from a place of everybody wants away fans at the ground and, you know, it being packed, and we have shown before, and we shown, you know, on Saturday evening that the club has that ability to attract good followings for teams, and it's right in the heartlands. And, you know, Lee are flying at the moment. You've got Saints, Warrington, Wigan. You've got potential for big crowds and great atmospheres. And, you know, ultimately, I think that's where the sentiment comes from. You know, other people.
Yeah. Before we go into the press conference, you can tell how long it has been since a meaningful game, because there was nowhere to hold the press conference after the game. So the room that they used to use back in the day is now, I think, used by the council for offices or something. So we ended up in a box, sort of crammed around a table in a box. I think there was six or seven journalists there interviewing the two. It wasn't too bad, to be fair, in the end, but perhaps a sign of that lack of big match sort of experience at the stadium, really, which, like you say, you'd like to see it brought back. So on that note, here is the post-match press conference in full with Alan Coleman.
You look a bit disappointed. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed, to be honest. Yeah, I just think a couple of things. What, just not smart enough at times, right? In crucial part of the game when you have to be smart and come back and got us. And don't get me wrong, we struggled to contain them second half in yardage, but I just thought how we worked hard defensively and coming out of yardage, we earned the right for staying that game and get our heads in front again. But yeah, just a couple of points where we had to take.
I've got to say, you had two great chances first half. Is that what you're talking about when those opportunities arose?
Yeah, there's them. I think Rodri Lodge scores if he just puts his head down and goes, you know, just said him there then, and he heard footsteps and said they were after they were thingy filming, so don't worry about that. And then Inti, just put your body online there and just fall on it and you've got it. But it's not as much that, it's just a couple of, I think there's 10 minutes ago, just over 10 minutes, and then tackle four, and I think Jack kicks it, and we'd only kick on tackle four, we just need to get to tackle five. and just take an opportunity. Bounce the ball could work for us, and it doesn't.
We thought Declan Pratt was going to set up for a drop. We?
Well, the message on was, you know, 16-0, let's take something, let's not come away with nothing. But yeah, just a bit of rubber green as well, I think, helps, and I think we've lost a bit of that.
The overall performance, wow, against the Super League side, in a hell of an atmosphere.
Look, yeah.
It lifted your players, didn't it?
We just asked for the best of us, and I think I got that first half. And in the second half, I got the best of us because I thought we attacked from our 20, 30. We asked questions of them. We went down short sides. We exploited. I think you saw from our tries, there were a couple of long-distance ones where we work hard for them.
You get the edge. You're going to take them on the edge.
Yeah, we knew we could do that, you know. But we've certainly got the quality, you know. And all we said is, be the best of us today, and I think we were. So I can't argue with that.
We were talking. People saying you're 17 heroes out there today. Can you pick anybody who really stuck out? Deck Patton was kicking them backwards and backwards. But I'm reluctant to say he was the star man because there's so many.
No, I just think when you break a game down, you've got your spine, you've got your 9-7-6-1. I thought they linked really well today on all shape, every time we played shape. But then I think our centres and wing linked really well. They played together, they defended together and attacked together. And then you break it down in your middle core, and I just thought they worked hard. They were bigger in size, they were bigger in power, they were quicker. But I just thought, you know, our contact were good a lot of the time, you know, holding the ruck, slowing it down. I think there was 2-6 against, so against the Super League team, that's an awesome effort. So, yeah, overall, how we broke it down in factors and areas of game, I thought we were really smart.
You said to me before in the game, you want to take something forward now. Could take a lot forward from that. Well, to the championships.
That's just been player-led, you know. We've just had a good chat in there then, and Ryan Lannan said it. He said, that's our standard, and we have to set that. We have to stick with that now. Nothing less than that. And if you look today, we had a game plan of getting everyone behind the ball as quick as possible. And we didn't do that at Batley. We were poor on it. And I think tackle two, everyone was behind the ball majority of the time. But our back line, our 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, was always behind the ball. Near enough tackle one. And it gives you a chance because you're shaped, ready to go. So that's when you can go down them short sides and take teams on. And with Patton and Gilmore, you've got that opportunity.
Did you change anything from... Well, you did change stuff from last week, Carl, especially with the interchanges and the way you rotated the pack. Was that definitely a learning from last week, landing on the bench, things like that?
Yeah, disappointed last week because my players basically just blew up. And they basically said, I'm knackered, basically. And when somebody's saying that and you've got somebody on the bench... You're thinking you've got to change. So the focus was, let's get our back line behind the ball on tackle one and two. So then if our middles are back on tackle three, they don't have to carry. They can just be in shape, ready to play. And as you saw today, on tackle three a lot of times, our middle would be right back to Gilly or Deck, and then we'd have some lead shape with Jack or centre. And it just gave us especially moving their middles as well. So their middles are travelling all the time and moving. So constantly running sideways, forwards, backwards. But at Batley, we were just happy for it. Just carry and just put it on a plate for them. So, yeah, I think you learn more as well. So when you're going against a better team, you can put that into practice. And I think how we did it and how we executed it today, I've got to be proud of that.
Martin Riley did the first 47, 48 minutes. Was that another tactic that you thought of doing rather than, you know, last week it sort of fell away a bit when you made the interchanges? So did you deliberately want to keep one of your starters on for a bit longer?
Well, we just kept getting messages on every 10, really. I was our middles and they kept saying, we're fine. So then when they're saying that, we're thinking, yeah, we're in a good place here now. So then basically our thought process was, we're going to struggle the last 40 with these. Well, last 30, should you say. 10 minutes into that first second half, you get that adrenaline after that. Fatigue sets in against a full-time team. So we just said if we can hold 6 back instead of 4, obviously we always got old Joey back. That was a guarantee. And we held Gav Benyon back. So that helped us massively. And then at end there, I think you can see, we had a chance to put Nick Gregson on. And we put him on, and then we brought him back off after 10 minutes, which gives us that 10-minute energy boost. And then we brought Martin Riley on for 8 minutes. We kept Joey Lyons on, and just our last shape for the last 7 minutes was 3 halfbacks playing, really, and just putting sideways to sideways. And we still kept getting joy on them. It was just they executed the 2 players in the last 10 very well, so that cost us.
What made you play Mike Butt over Reece Williams? Was that something that you planned? I know you didn't play last week.
Yeah, Butty, for the couple of weeks beforehand, had probably not been in. A couple of errors. some dumb carries. And I think if you explain to Sunday and then week after it's similar, I think the next step is, you know, let's sit out and watch what somebody else can do. And I thought when Incy come back in last week, we hadn't seen him with Dragon. And I thought Incy was back to his best of how he goes forward and how he carries. But I always knew when we'd clip Warrington this week, how George kicks, Butty was the man for them kicks for me. Because he's just, when he's on, he's on. He doesn't drop nothing and he puts his body on line. I'm not saying Rhys Williams doesn't, but I think Mike approaches them differently. And I thought he was quite one of our main men today, Mike, but I thought he was brilliant.
What did you say to Ryan at half-time after he tried to knock that kick out?
Get your head up. Don't worry about it. It's one of them, isn't it? It's a tough one. Because both wingers, really, Mike doesn't have challenge for it. He can let him catch it and then tackle him. But he challenges it, knocks it forward, so they get another runner play, and then he kicks it over and Incy tries catch it rather than just punch it anywhere, basically. But there'll be better players from it. You know, they don't make many errors, but when wingers do make errors, they usually cost you.
Are you going to have Maxwell back at training this week?
He plays like that, yeah. I just went down to him then and I just said, well done, mate. I think this ground suits him, to be honest. I think he's played 3 games for us and his best game was probably on here. So I feel the faster the track for Max when he comes on, he's quite an impact player. But, you know, speaking to Sam then, they picked a couple up, but he said they get some back. So potentially we might have some busted bodies, to be honest, but hopefully we can get a couple in now. We've certainly got some pennies in bank, hopefully.
Yeah, just the last one. Obviously, you said last week about wanting a crowd. I know you said to me you were hoping for 6,000 the other week and you got 7,000. How did you find the occasion?
I thought it was brilliant and I just feel it helped so much. You know, it's just a shame we constantly can't get an away crowd also what can fill an end and bring that atmosphere because, you know, you need 2 teams to create an atmosphere and when it's such a fierce derby like it was today, I just thought it made it special. You know, we've just challenged our fellas there as well and said, unfortunately, we can't get to Wembley this way, but we can get to Wembley another way. And we're going to challenge the fans for that as well. So we're going to challenge them for creating atmosphere in our 1895 journey. And if we play like that, we've certainly got a good chance of getting there. So our focus now is Doncaster, which is a massive game because we go 3 from 4 or 2 from 4. And for being the top end of this comp, I think you've got to be 3 from 4, not 2. And then we can enjoy this evening. You know, I think they've earned the right to do that.
Right, so moving on from the Warrington game, and Mike, this week you attended the Widnes Vips Q&A with Stuart Murphy, the Widnes chairman. I'm sure he was probably in quite a good mood after Saturday's events.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he was and he wasn't. He was saying that he expressed how gutted he was with the result, and then that was compounded with, obviously, he's a Wigan supporter, isn't he? And when he last checked the score in the game, you know, they was obviously comfortably winning and that unraveled. So I don't think he actually had the best of nights, to be fair. But no, joking aside, he was obviously made up with the effort. And obviously there was a good few points that come out of it. I'll kind of run through the most important ones that probably people are most interested in. So the first one quickly, as we know, if you follow social media, you know, 22,000 has now been handed over by Vips again to the club, which is, you know, it's great. You know, that's what we pay into it for. And obviously that'll go towards, you know, strengthening Alan Coleman's playing squad. One brief one that was touched upon, which I noted down, I thought it was quite interesting, like a perspective, I suppose, as supporters that we don't see, but I believe the medical bills for last year was touching like £24,000. So I think for people, you know, who, you know, when the club, you know, are, you know, releasing players to save costs, running with a smaller squad, these are perhaps costs that we don't particularly think of, James.
Yeah, and it's to do with the insurance, the whole insurance of rugby league is clubs effectively now, they don't get insured for injuries because it's actually more cost effective to just pay for the treatment than get insurance, which, you know, if Widnes is shelling out 24 grand, you can imagine how much the insurance must be. And a lot of clubs have been doing, I think Widnes were doing that when they were in Super League, in fact, and that's all down to this. That's all down to how over the last decade, insurance premiums for rugby league have gone through the roof to the point where, you know, you might as well pay for things yourself. But yeah, I mean, 24 grand is almost an astronomical amount of money, in my opinion, for a part-time club. You know, 24 grand, you play what? 14, 15 home games. So you're looking at like almost a grand every game. A grand that you make every game is...
And you lob on top of that as well, loan fees and dual reg fees for players as well.
If you think that's a grand a game, so £1,000 is... What's £1,000? 50 people on the gate? So, you know, roughly. So you need 50 people on the gate just to pay the medical bills. And yeah, I think I do like, it's good, obviously, that that Stuart Murphy did that, the thing with the Vits, but I do think information like this should probably be a bit more widespread. I think, you know, it's good, you know, Widnes Vips, it's good that they organise these sorts of things, but I am tempted to say that maybe it'd be better for the club if more people could be... I know anyone can go or anyone can be a member, but the diehard
people are accessible.
Yeah, I think, you know, the diehard people are interested, but I think that sort of information, the casual fan, it might, you know, it casual fans who would never probably go to a Members Monday or a Widnes Vips thing, I think that sort of thing would pique their interest and maybe give them a wider understanding of what's going on. But yeah, sorry, carry on, Mike.
Yeah, no worries. IMG was discussed. Again, like with similar points we've discussed on this and as everybody else is in the rugby league world, but, you know, Stuart is a fan of it. He believes it forces sides to raise standards, certainly off the field, and, you know, keep improving facilities, X, Y, and Z. I think he's right to a point, in my opinion. I do, but for me, I agree with you, Jane. You know, promotion and relegation, for me, that, you know, that's for me, that's why people come and watch sport. I'd love there to be a world where you could have both. Do you know what I mean? I think you should have standards that should be met to get into the top tier, of course. But, you know, I think promotion and relegation, proper promotion and relegation should be in. And then, of course, as well, you know, the cost that it's costing,
yeah,
to pay IMG for this as well, you know.
I think I just find it really hard to see how Widnes are going to get to a point where they're going to be in on the IMG, because, like, look at it now. Salford are on the bones of their backside, so Salford are probably the Super League team that you would say are at risk. I don't know the situation with Huddersfield. That seems a bit of a funny one, especially with them moving to Halifax. It's like, that actually might help them because their stadium utilisation figure will go up anyway. But let's say Salford are at risk. The problem you've got for Widnes is that Widnes were, I mean, we'd probably have to ignore last season's score because they're well out of it. But let's say Salford drop. Widnes have still got to finish above Toulouse, Bradford, York on the IMG score. Now, if we were playing games and it was a case of, right, we need to beat them teams to get there, you feel like you have an element of control, but ultimately you've got no real element of control over that, because as much as Widnes say they'll improve in areas, them other clubs will improve in them areas, and you've got no control over what Toulouse, York, Bradford, whoever do in them areas. What you have got control over is if York, Toulouse or Bradford beat you on the grand final. You know, and that's where I can't see an eventuality at the moment. I'm afraid that Widnes end up in Super League on the IMG. I can't see it. You know, and even if they extended Super League to 14, even then I can't see how Widnes become a part of it. Now, you know, obviously I feel like Widnes should be a part of it. As I said before, I actually think there's probably, you'd probably struggle to get 18 teams who'd actually want to play, you know, Batley, Dewsbury, teams like that. They don't want to be in the Super League. And they're never actually going to get close to being in it. I actually think there's probably only 17 or 18 clubs that could really do it anyway. It's just a shame that no one's got the guts to sort of try and make it work that way. But yeah, that's out of our control. But it's a big year for Widnes because that score last year was diabolical. Let's get it.
It was a borderline embarrassment, mate.
Let's get it straight. That was a diabolical score for Widnes last year, you know, and they need to be improving significantly. Widnes should be in the top 16 without question in that IMG score. And that's the challenge that they've got this year. They need to make sure that they're back. They need to be in and amongst that team, the next group of teams, ready for one of these Super League teams to drop out. Widnes need to be part of that group. You know, Bradford are there, Toulouse are there, York are there. Widnes need to be with them three because we know that Widnes have got the raw materials, they've got the facilities, they've got the ground, they've got the history, they've got the player pool, got the fan base. We know that all the raw materials are there, but unless it says so on that score, unless they're in that top 16 on the score, the rest of the world or the rest of the rugby league world don't see that.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that at all. The next one, which probably one of the more interesting points for people, I've been asked this quite a lot actually, so here it is. What did Widnes make out of Saturday evening? Well, if you take out all the match day costs and Warrington's share of what they got, it was £38,000. So a decent amount. Unfortunately, I believe there was a bit of trouble on Lower House Lane. It was there for people to see on the main road. That's obviously going to be investigated and potentially club fines could come our way, which, you know, obviously that'll be taken out of, you know, what profit we'd have made. But sticking to the gun, I think, you know, for a part-time club, James, you know, if we're saying, you know, medical bills of 24K, you know, for the year's a lot, you know, 38K to a part-time club, if you're going to be putting some of that towards player recruitment is welcome money and has probably come at a really pivotal time given the amount of away fixtures we've had as well.
Yeah, I mean, assuming that Warrington took 50%, I don't know whether they took 50%.
I believe they did.
So in theory, you're making 76K off that game, aren't you? In theory, you know, if that was just a Widnes game, if Widnes had taken the money, you're making 76K. When you told me that figure, I couldn't decide whether I actually thought it was good or not. Not in criticism of the club, just in terms of thinking, bloody hell, they get 7,000 in and they're only making 38K.
Well, what I would say, James, to that is it makes you wonder, you know, when we get low attendances. Think Cup game last year. What did we have? 700 people.
I mean,
you think, are you getting any money out of that or are you losing? You know what I mean?
I think that's a fair comment. I think obviously the Warrington game is a little bit of an anomaly because you're opening the extra stand, security, stewarding costs. People don't realise how much police. The policing costs. I mean, I've had my eyes open to it in football the last couple of years.
I believe the dogs cost £1,000 a piece. Right,
mate, if the police decide they need to have eight officers there, you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, before you know it, you get in a big crowd and you're thinking, oh, we'll get a decent number of people in here. And before you know it, the extra money you'll make from the people has all just gone to the police. And it's an absolute, it's just absolutely bonkers. But yeah, completely agree with what you said there. Yeah, you wonder, like, when there's only two and a half thousand in, how are you making it? But then I also think back to sort of like the Super League days, and I think, well, to exist as a Super League club, you know, and I know 7,000 was always mentioned, wasn't it, as a bit of a, that was a bit of a, we need 7,000 to make it work. You know, let's give Warwick, let's acknowledge that Warrington brought probably the best part of 3,000 of that 7,000, probably, you know, maybe even more, I'm not too sure. It just goes to show how difficult it is with all the costs that the club's got to face. And it goes back again to my earlier point, and that's where I think the council, you know, the council have got their own issues, but I still think you've got to try and work together to make money rather than trying to fleece each other in some respects. Surely working together would be a better way of doing things. Was there anything else on your
channel? Yeah, there's a couple more interesting points, but just with the council, actually, it briefly come up. It's the last time we had one of them meetings. It was quite apparent, you know, the relationship with the council seemed to not be on a great standing point and could have been a little bit fractured. It got mentioned and it's still an ongoing thing, so no detail was really given, but Stuart seemed a lot more confident, and the proposals that was first put in front of him, he said they're a lot better now and they've improved. So it sounds like there's been a bit of progress being made there. Just on the dual red situation with Warrington, apparently we've got 6 agreed players that we have access to on dual red, specific players. So, I mean, I suppose we can work out a few of them, you know, and I think, you know, we'll speak about Kai Taylor in a minute, which I think that's maybe the one that Alan's probably been after the most, given the Jake Mason situation and, you know, playing to a game plan. But it was also mentioned as well, interestingly, with like your Wiggins and your Lee, and obviously dual reg with Warrington, there's a fee that goes to them clubs, each player. Now, he didn't give specifics of what that is. I'm assuming the agreed fee is different for each club. Maybe that's why he didn't elaborate, you know, because there's a risk of getting out and then a club pushing up, I guess, do you know what I mean? Pushing up on the figure. So again, another interesting one, I suppose, for fans where, you know, we just see a lone player rock up, don't we? And we go, oh, hey, you know, he's good or he's not good, and he'll go back. Well, there's a cost attached to that as well, you know, that you don't realise. Jordan Johnson was brought up. I believe he's back in training, which is a positive. So it sounds like we may see him hopefully sooner rather than later. I believe he's going down London for some kind of treatment that somebody, I believe, from Warrington got last year, which sped up a similar injury, you know, the return date. So he's doing that, and, you know, obviously it goes without saying, James, doesn't it? You know, I think he'd have thrived in that game on Saturday, and you'll always miss your player of the season. So hopefully we'll get him back. And the injury, he's not trained since December, and the injury he picked up, it wasn't rugby-related. It was just one of them natural things in life, I guess, that he's just picked up, which is, it was a bizarre one, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, and obviously it's a massive miss from your team. He gets the best out of other players as well, as we've discussed in previous ones. So he'll almost be like a new signing in some ways when he does come back. But, you know, let's remember as well that these are part-time players, and ultimately it impacts it. I know they've just not long had a baby and stuff. It impacts on your ability to live your actual life as well, doesn't it? Having an injury like that. So at times like that, it puts it into perspective that it's, yeah, you want him back on the field, but it's also important for his own health as well that he looks after himself and gets it right.
100%. And just the last point as well, actually, because we've been asked about this a few times, and I've finally got some figures to put next to it. The pass it on season tickets. Now, I don't really know what people's reaction is going to be out of this, but here goes. So last year, I think we agreed that it hadn't been pushed enough, and 100 was sold last year. So this year, the club put a bit more, I wouldn't say it was completely brilliant, but a bit more advertising, should I say, into the scheme. They only sold 60 this year, and 20 of them was purchased by directors. So I was really disappointed with that, because I think it's a great initiative and people have been asking about it. And of course, it's affordability. It is affordability for people. But I was a little bit disappointed that that's gone from 100 to 60, even though you've pushed it a bit more, if that makes sense.
I think they're looking at it the wrong way, is my personal opinion. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are fans who will do it, but they need to be targeting that at businesses, at sponsors.
Yeah.
You should be going to Wix and saying to them, do you want to, you know, can you pay for 50 kids to watch Widnes every week for the season?
Yeah.
As part of their community. And, you know, whether they then want to donate them to schools, whatever, that's fine. I think you'll get a little bit of that. You know, clearly there's expats and people like that who'd probably pay for a, you know, a season ticket, whatever, for somebody else. But I think to get substantial numbers, and I've seen it in other, it actually, obviously I do a little bit of work in sports sponsorship, and it has opened my eyes a little bit being in companies where they've actually said they might have paid for a board or paid for, you know, to sponsor a stand. But actually, when you ask them what benefits they've enjoyed the most, or what's been the most beneficial, is when they've had two tickets for the game, so that they raffle off within the company. So, you know, say they get two tickets to every home game, they've had loads of interest from people wanting to enter the raffle to get the two tickets for that home game. And then if you turn that around and say, well, we'll give you 10 tickets then, and they're not, but then the beauty of that as well is you're then getting them people coming to the game as well, who then might be like, oh, I like it and want to get in. So, like I say, I think the approach to that has got to be more on the side of getting sponsors to pay for it. And that's what they used to do, I guess, with the community foundation type stuff back in the day. So, yeah. Well, let's move on from that. I know you're going to type something up with all that in anyway, so we'll link to that. Well, we've mentioned him, so let's just... We'll leave the Gregson thing to last. We'll talk about Kai Taylor-Ray. So Alan Coleman was pretty open in the preseason and said that he wanted Taylor-Ray. He's a very lively fullback. Never really got into the game last week, actually. But he's the sort of player that, as you mentioned, Jake Mason, he's quick. He travels off across the ground very quickly. The artificial pitch suits him. And it looks like, you say, is as if he's going to come in and Jack Owens is going to go to the centre, probably be named in the team at centre, and Taylor-Ray goes in at fullback.
Yeah, I think the words Alan used was Jack's more of a provider now, you know, rather than, you know, pushing up in support. And we probably do at times lack that striking from deep. You know, you think of that lovely try that we scored again on Saturday. It was centre to winger, back to centre to score. You watch a lot of Super League games, and it's your standoff, it's your fullback, you know, supporting on the inside, who, you know, picks them tries up, which Jack maybe, you know, can't do as frequent as often anymore, you know, due to, you know, just getting a little bit older, and his qualities, you know, firmly lie elsewhere now. Reading between the lines, I think, you know, once that Mason situation happened, I think Alan's eyes have, you know, moved to Taylor-Ray, and I think he's waited patiently. I think he's obviously got an idea and a plan in his head of how he wants to play, and having pace out the back like Taylor-Ray's, it's key to doing so. So it will be interesting. I have no doubts Jack Owens will be in that side at Doncaster. And I have no doubts, unless something happens, which means he gets recalled, Taylor-Ray will be in it as well. So we'll probably get our first little signs of whatever Alan's got cooking, you know, seeing the signs of it and seeing how it goes, see if it's going to be a success.
I actually wonder whether we might not see Jack Owens on Sunday. I don't know this, and I don't have any inside information. But he did seem to pick up he was a bit in the wars towards the end of the game on Saturday, and of course he's only just come back from injury. And I'm wondering whether when you've got the week off, I suppose it depends where you look at it, because they've got the week off the following week, they could not play him this week and he gets a good bit of rest in time for the York game. But then I suppose you could flip that around and say, well, he could play this week and then he's got next week off anyway. But we'll see when the club announced this. Well, we probably won't see when the club announced the squad, because Jay Field's in the Wigan squad, but apparently he's on one leg. So we'll find out on Sunday when they announce the 18-man.
Yeah, let's say it'd be interesting either way. To be honest, I must have been caught too much in the atmosphere, mate, on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been nothing. It might have been nothing, but he got a couple of, and obviously it was his first game back. He got a couple of, he played the week before, didn't he? I just noticed it might have just been one of them end of the game type things that, obviously Widnes had put a lot into the game. But we shall see anyway. Right, so we'll have to talk about this Nick Gregson thing. Don't want to dwell on it too much, but he's got 3-match ban for historical tweets, they're calling it. There's been a little bit of... I think probably the RFL didn't help themselves with the way that they worded the suspension, because there's been a lot of people have been getting out of the pram a little bit because they said the tweets dated back to 2012, and people have read that as if the tweets were from 2012, when actually there's been, I've only seen a couple of examples, but there have been tweets more recently than 2012, which is the reason he's copped the ban. If we're going to start banning players for tweeting stupid things, I think a lot of players are going to get banned.
Well, they're going to have to, aren't they? I mean, I'll call it laughable, to be honest. And the reason why it's laughable is when these historical tweets come out, well, it wasn't a problem then, was it? But why wasn't it sanctioned then? And now we're in a world where we're moving forwards and we're sanctioning going backwards. And for me, again, it's just a mess. It's a real mess, because you've just opened this can of worms now, haven't you? And I've seen, and I'm not going to name the players who are seen on social media and stuff, but fans have quoted certain players on social media where they've started going through random players, tweets going back and going, X person, is going to be in trouble for this if Nick's been in trouble for that, and that's what they've opened up. And let's have it right, mate. This has come from something completely different. Also, it just seems so tit for tat, and it's just not for me. It's not a good look for the sport again. And you're looking at the RFL and the ongoing shenanigans at Salford, and this getting dealt with. For me, it's just another bit. A bit embarrassing again for the sport. It really is. Yeah, I don't really have much more to say than that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's pathetic the way it's come out and the way it's happened. Like I say, I've only seen a couple of tweets that people have flagged as having an issue with, and to be honest, even some of them I didn't really see a massive issue with at all. These are part-time players. I don't really get why, and I get that players have got to be responsible maybe on social media to a point, certainly the full-time players, but I just don't see why the RFL has jurisdiction over what a player wants to tweet on his personal account.
You think if anything, it's more of a club matter, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, ultimately, he's employed by the club, and if the club have got exception to what he's tweeting, then they can reprimand him. I don't really, unless he's bagging a referee or questioning somebody's integrity. I don't really see why the RFL has jurisdiction over what somebody tweets. And as you say, it's opened a can of worms. It sets a precedent. It's another example of this forensic analysis that goes on in rugby league. Now we see it with the match review panel every week. And I have no doubt, you've mentioned it there, I have no doubt fans will be scouring through social media accounts trying to find something that they can pin on. Because let's get it right, that's what's happened to Gregson. Somebody's done that to Nick Gregson's tweets. Someone tried to say to me that it's being flagged up during the investigation. There's no way. Someone's seen them probably at some point, and they've used it as a weapon against him. And as you say, why didn't it come out when they happened? You know, even if they'd have come out last year, Nick Gregson was injured for half a year. He could have served a 3-match ban while he was injured. Like I say, they must have found, for it to have been the ban that they've given out, they must have found some stuff that they were pretty unhappy with. As I say, I don't know the content of them. And so I can't comment on whether they were, you know, I can't give an opinion on them, but they must have found some pretty bad stuff for him to be getting the ban that he's got. It's a shame that Widnes get punished for it. It's a shame for Nick Gregson that he misses three games now. But I suppose it's one of the things that's happened. I saw someone was tweeting me saying that Widnes should appeal it, but I'm just like...
Oh, God, no. Just go, right, whatever, take the three games.
He pleaded guilty. He accepted the charge anyway, and you're just like, it's just one of them things. You've just got to... And take it and move on. There are bigger battles that you need to fight than that one, to be perfect.
Let's have it right. Let's take the club out of it. Let's take the RFL out of it. Let's take us out of it. You know, I think Nick, on a personal level, he's had a pretty rough time, and he being at Widnes in terms of these things that have come his way, or arguably this maybe, but this one will come to light for me if the issue, you know, last year didn't happen, and that wasn't his fault. And, you know, he's had a rough time, and I'm sure he just wants to close the chapter now, doesn't he, and start a fresh one. And unfortunately, it means missing three games. But like you say, get them done, dusted, and out the way, and you've just got to come back stronger, haven't you, as a player, haven't you, and kind of leave it where it is.
Yep. So in the interest of moving on, before we wrap this up, it's Doncaster on Sunday for Widnes. Widnes got a damn good hiding at Doncaster last season. And I have to admit, I am a bit fearful of the After the Lord Mayor Show sort of thing happening for Widnes this week. Doncaster, by no means, that it's a tough place to go anyway, but it's a tricky... I wouldn't be surprised if Widnes lost this week. Against Doncaster, which I suppose it's just a tip. I don't know whether that's just a typical sort of way a fan thinks, but it just wouldn't surprise me based on the amount of work that they had to do last week and the nature of that game.
A very handy team, a physical team, got some experience in there, you know, in players like Beretta Farimo, you know, Paulie, Connor Robinson, great halfback, Craig Ott, so many experienced players. And last year, I think the final score didn't reflect the game. I think it looked quite kind to Widnes. Like you say, we got a bit of a tater in, and I remember Alan saying, I think it was the first time he was arguably disappointed with his team. So a massive challenge, but for me, I think, totally agree with what you're saying, but I think for me now and this Widnes team, and certainly the style of play that we was playing and the brand, for me now, if you can do that against Warrington and a Super League outfit, you've got to set your standards and be like, right, well, you know, it's one thing doing it in the Challenge Cup and going so near, but yet so far. This is our league campaign, and that's our bar now. We can do it.
Well,
the worry is, I understand what you're saying. How much has it took out the fuel tank?
Yeah.
I understand that. You know what I mean?
I mean, Alan Coleman said it after the game. He said, like, that's got to be the... Well, to be fair, he did say that the players led the discussion. The players said that this has got to be the standard now. And to be fair, it is, in some ways, it's exciting to think that you've got that standard now, or you feel like the standard's there, that Widnes could be the best team. But to be the best team in any competition, you've got to maintain that level week in, week out. And Widnes have had a decent... Widnes have been winning games without playing too well. They've lost the last two. The Batley one was unfortunate. The Warrington one was the context of that game was a lot different. But it's almost... You're excited to think that if Widnes could make it stick week in, week out, just how good they could be. Right. We need to do our predictions, Mike.
Oh, here we go. I thought I was getting away with this.
Oh, no. We haven't done the scores from the 1895 Cup week.
Oh, we had them in, are we?
The other week. Well, we predicted them, and I don't know if we both predicted the same. No, we didn't. I got 8 out of 8.
Yeah, because I went for... Doncaster?
You went for Doncaster to beat Sheffield, yeah. Which has come back to bite you. So that means that over the season, I'm winning 14-13 at the moment. So I'll take that. This week's games, there's a game tomorrow night. Friday night. Bradford versus Barrow at Oddsall. We're going Bradford for that, surely, do you think?
Yeah, like say, great win for Barrow against Oldham at Oldham the other week. But yeah, Bradford too strong, I think.
Toulouse Hunslet is on Saturday night.
Yeah, I've not much to say on that, mate. Toulouse, I think.
Hunslet signed Lee Gaskell this week. He was linked to Widnes in the off-season. And then Sunday, it's Batley York. Ooh.
Cracking game.
Batley York. I'm going to go Batley for home advantage. What are you thinking?
I'm torn. I know Batley have lost Dane Manning, haven't they? They're a bit light in the pack, and they was against us, to be fair, but the lone players did the business. And now they brought in Poposhi, haven't they, from Bradford. I'm going to go for York.
Doncaster Widnes.
After that Warrington performance, I cannot go for Widnes.
Yeah, you
know, it could be season defying that.
I'm going for Widnes. Halifax Featherstone.
Cracking game. I mean, what a start by Halifax. You know, they've been flawless, haven't they? And they're at home.
Yeah, and Featherstone changed the coach. They've had a few. They've been a bit up and down, Featherstone. I'm going to go Halifax.
I'm going to go Halifax with that.
And then Oldham against London Broncos.
London could turn up and do the business, you know, they really could. I think I've just got to go with Oldham. But there's been a few signs where I had Oldham mid-table for certain reasons, and I think the Barrow performance was one and Batley at home was another, where going week to week to week and learning the trade of the Championship, it's a difficult beast. I've got to go for Oldham, but that London could well turn up and win that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Well, I'm just trying to see. London haven't actually played since the 1st of March. They've had a couple of weeks off. It must have been their bye week.
And that can go for you and it can go against you, can't it?
Yeah, because London always have a bit of a slow start, mainly because they've never usually built the team in time, but they did beat Featherstone the other week or last month. But yeah, I think Oldham will probably, at home, you'd have to tip Oldham. Right, so that's us for another week. Thanks everyone for listening. Please do drop us any comments and suggestions and feedback on the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page or leave a comment wherever you listen to your podcasts. And myself and Mike will see you at Doncaster. And if not, we'll see you next week.